Welcome to Face to Face on Prairie Public. I'm Dave Thompson, hosting this debate for the candidates for Department of Public Instruction, the Superintendent of Public Instruction. Here with me today, Kristen Baszler from Mandan, Tracy Potter from Bismarck. Let's start by just having you just introduce yourselves to our listening audience.
Thank you very much, Dave, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. As you said, my name is Kirsten Baszler. I am a native of Flasher, North Dakota. I was a graduate of Flasher High School. And my entire adult life, I've been dedicated to the education of children in North Dakota. I've spent over 20 years as a teacher, library media specialist, and a vice principal with the Bismarck Public School System, and have been a member of the Mandan School Board for the last 9 years, serving as its president for the last 7 years.
Then let me ask you as a follow-up, why do you want to run?
Again, it goes back to my passion for children. My perspective of education, the educational issues that we're facing in North Dakota, in our nation at this time, they're critical. And the comprehensive approach that I have with my experience of being a leader in education on the school board, a facilitator, a practitioner in the classroom, in the hallways, as well as a parent of 3 college-age students right now, I really understand the issues. I have an extensive background and experience in advocating for good policies, good public education policies and laws, and I want to put that experience to work for all of North Dakota students.
All right. Tracy, go ahead and tell us who you are.
Well, I'm a Bismarck-born child. My parents were Bismarck High graduates, but grew up in Grand Forks and graduated Grand Forks Central and went on to the University of North Dakota, where I studied history and became a certified teacher, went to the Center for Teaching and Learning there, taught high school briefly, taught in college as well, and really enjoyed education. I just thought that there was really something special about it. But I was dragged away from that and came down and got involved in state government. You may remember the Commissioner of Insurance. He recruited me and I came and worked here. And went back to grad school. Was a teacher, graduate teaching assistant there, and became heavily involved in public life. In public service. I've always been interested in it. I was just recently asked, why didn't you run for superintendent of public instruction in the past? I said, well, because there was a more qualified guy in the job. Dr. Sandstedt had been a state legislator, a state senator. He'd been lieutenant governor for 8 years, and, of course, he had classroom teaching experience, and his background was a great debate coach and well-known. And so it wasn't until last fall that I went to Dr. Sandstedt and I said, what do you think? Are you going to be running for this again? And he was coy and said he'd decide on President's Day as per usual. And when he decided not to, I said, that's a good job for me. I can do a good job in that position. I've got the experience in state government, the experience in managing people. I've run the Fort Abraham Lincoln Foundation now for 19 years with, 100 employees signing 100 paychecks every couple of weeks. And the classroom teaching experience and the background in education that lets me understand the issues and where our teachers are today. And I think we've been in we've got a bipartisan agreement to go the wrong direction in education in America. I think I can help. I can help relieve the burden of the teachers and allow them to get back to teaching.
Now, that leads me into my first issue, which I wanted to talk about, the whole idea of No Child Left Behind. I think I've heard both of you say that you don't like how it's kind of rolled out. Maybe you don't like the concept of No Child Left Behind. And I think both of you have said there's some problems with the what's replacing it, this reach for the top.
Right.
Let me ask Senator Potter first, what would you do to replace it?
Well, I think that the as a state, we need to determine if we're going to let the tail wag the dog. And my view on the on federal funding is it comes with federal controls, and it's big. It's $300 million of our budget, a little higher than that. It's being decreased, of course, because of the sequestration and other the problem with the federal government. But that's out of a $1.7 billion budget. And so we're letting the $300 million wag the $1.7. And of course, everything that local school districts are putting into education. My view is I'm not prepared to say reject the federal money. I understand the impetus to it. I might even feel like it myself, but I know that the taxpayers in North Dakota have to be consulted on such a thing, you know, before we do that. My view on what replaces No Child Left Behind is let's stall, delay, minimally comply with federal guidelines. I don't believe that the penalties that are in No Child Left Behind will actually be assessed because no state is meeting the guidelines of No Child Left Behind. And so I would this is my philosophy towards it. I'd say take it slowly, but I do not embrace the idea that we can measure the quality of our education by standardized test scores of our students. I just don't agree that, and I would be glad to go into more detail on that, but I'll give...
Yes, we'll give you a chance to do that, but yeah. For Kirsten Basler.
My view on No Child Left Behind, I believe in the concept of it. I believe in the fact that our parents, our community, our state, our students deserve the accountability that what is happening in their classrooms is of high quality. So the idea of No Child Left Behind, it's a well-intentioned idea created and formulated by people that didn't have practical experience in education. And so the practicality of it is impossible. And so I really believe that we do still need to strive and attain for that accountability. But No Child Left Behind is not the answer. No Child Left Behind is the nickname for an act that was created and passed for the first time in 1965. And that act does do some really good things. The No Child Left Behind portion or version of it expired. And we need to reauthorize it. And there are two bills currently in Congress that have been passed on the House, in the House Committee and the Senate Committee. And those versions, both versions, return so much local control back to the states where it belongs. So in turn, the states can return more local control to the local school districts where the best decisions are made for children. And the answer to that, or what we should do with No Child Left Behind, is our Congress should get together and they should act and reauthorize ESEA, which is its formal name, with the changes that have been proposed that return the control to the states so we can return the control to our local school districts. Regarding the waiver that we're considering, we all want relief from the punitive sanctions of No Child Left Behind, but this waiver does not address the changes that we need. It replaces one set of rules and punitive sanctions with another. The Race to the Top grants that have been proposed as an alternative of funding sources, North Dakota isn't even out of the starting blocks at a fair game because so many of the points for the Race to the Top grants are awarded to systems that North Dakota doesn't even allow. Charter schools are not allowed by our Constitution, and Race to the Top grants, their weighting factor favors those states that have charter schools heavily.
I'll follow up with you, and then I'd like to get Tracy's answer, too. One of the arguments against No Child Left Behind in its current form, and you heard this back when it was first talked about, is teachers would have to teach to a test, the basic standardized test thing.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand you saying, that if it's reauthorized by the bills that are in Congress right now, maybe less emphasis on standardized tests and more emphasis on classroom instruction?
Absolutely. Results-driven accountability. So we're not so hampered by the tests for the means of the tests. But the testing, what we value, should be measured. And we should determine in North Dakota what we want our children to learn and know and be able to do. And the assessing that or testing that, whatever term you want to use, is a good thing. But we have to make sure that we are assessing and measuring what we value in North Dakota. So we set standards of accountability, and we make sure that our students are reaching those standards.
Senator Potter.
I think, Dave, that this is probably the principal distinction, other than our backgrounds or qualifications for the position. I think this is the principal distinction between myself and Kirsten. I actually think that it's wrong-headed to attempt to measure things that are immeasurable. My campaign line has been that Galileo said, measure what's measurable and make measurable what's not. But some things just aren't measurable. Teaching is an art form. And when we attempt to measure it, here's what happens. First thing is, we focus the curriculum of our schools on those things that are testable, that are measurable. I believe also in accountability. I believe that we absolutely have to improve as much as we can the ability of our teachers to teach and the quality of our teachers. That improvement comes from their mentors, comes from the principals. It comes from a subjective analysis of their abilities and their work, not through the objective measurement of the test scores of their students, because some things just don't lend themselves to testing. Art, music, all the social sciences. These are things where the discussion, where it's learning how to think, not what to think, not that, but engaging the children's brains in finding the solutions to things, or some things that don't have solutions, just being able to discuss them at length. And I fear very much that going down the road of trying to measure everything leads us down the wrong path. My belief in how we improve education is a simple one. We find the best practices, and that's what the department's role will be, is to find the best practices. Talk to the teachers that have won the Golden Apple Awards. Study the science in the industry, as you might want to call it, and bring those to the college level. Right now, we see the chancellor is trying to impact elementary and secondary education. I want the superintendent to be able to impact college education of the people who are going to be working in our schools, and then mentor those teachers so that they have the opportunity to succeed, because there's nothing harder than that first 3 months in a classroom. Everybody knows it. By Christmas time, teachers are ready to bolt. But give them a little help, and they'll become career-long experts at this.
Well, go ahead.
I think we've touched on a lot of things there. In that, I think we've touched on teacher evaluations. I think we've touched on the need for what I have said from the very beginning, the need to have a continuum of learning, a learning system in North Dakota from pre-K through 20, and that collaboration and true conversation between our early childhood teachers through our K-12 system and onto our higher ed system. As far as the measurability, if we're talking about teacher evaluations there, I agree that there aren't, there are certain things, music and art, that are immeasurable as far as curriculum and course content. But then I think we kind of veered over into the measurability of teachers. And as a teacher and as a vice principal, I know in our profession, we encourage the evaluations. We look forward to them so we can continue to grow. And what we know in our profession is that teaching is measurable. There are certain aspects, certainly there is the art to it, but there are certain things that you had said are identifiable, and there are certain teachers out there that have good practice, those Golden Apple winners. And that's how we've developed the rubric or evaluation system that we're beginning to work with now. Content knowledge is important for a teacher to have content knowledge. Pedagogy skills, the ability to differentiate and change, that's important and that's identifiable. And the ability to create dynamic lessons. There are certain specific characteristics of good dynamic lessons. That's measurable. And I think getting those teacher mentors or teacher coaches, what we call them now, working with the teachers, that is what we need to do to move our profession of teaching and learning forward, and helping our principals become better evaluators of that as well.
What I'm hearing from teachers on a regular basis is a campaign around the state and talk to teachers, and the teachers who come to Fort Lincoln, for instance, and on the field trips, and I assist in their teaching about the Mandan Indians to their students, things like that. What I hear from them is we're being overtested. The kids are being overtested. They're not worried about themselves. They're not worried about their own, evaluation. What they're worried about is that the children are being sorted rather than treated as individuals. I give you an example. Recently, there was a story on your radio network that about IQ testing. IQ, of course, is a to some degree, it's a construct. It's measuring not true intelligence. It's measuring the socialization of the child in relationship to the people who made the test. And so you know, some of us do very well in those kinds of tests, while others don't do as well. And of course, there's always test anxiety. But what this researcher said was that he could identify. He sold a bill of goods. He said, "I can identify those students that are about to blossom in IQ, and I'll tell the teachers which students those are, but I won't tell the students." And they tried this in a school district, and the teachers believed that he was right, and that child here and this child there were about to blossom in IQ scores. And guess what? Well, they did, because they were treated differently by the teacher, who thought that they had more capabilities than they'd previously thought about that child. And this is where, I'm serious, very serious about this. And I understand that we can, and there's a place for testing. As a teacher, I prepared my own tests, and they had in them the direction of learning something. I want to stimulate discussion about things. I don't just want to measure what they're able to repeat back to me. I want them to show me that they're able to process information and think about it. There's a place for that. But we've gone way too heavily towards this. And what I hear again from superintendents as well as the teachers is that we end up in the process of trying to create the perfect system that will measure our students and their learning. We end up sorting those students as opposed to treating each of them like the individual that they are. And again, I think that's the goal of education, is to find out what the kids, show them a whole world of a variety of interests, and hope that they can find one and then give them the skills to succeed at it.
Moving along, I'd like to follow on something that was brought up in the last few minutes, and that's the Chancellor of Higher Education's new standards for admissions to the university system. And this goes back to the days where they were talking about there are too many remedial classes that are being offered at UND, NDSU, and some of the four-year institutions. I'll start with you, Senator, because you seem to be skeptical about what he's saying about some of these standards. How do you feel about his standards and how he said he would like to inspire students at the high school level to do better and to work harder?
First, aren't you glad that we're not speaking over each other, fighting for the microphone at a time? This is great. Otto von Bismarck, of course, was the Iron Chancellor of Germany. I believe we now have an Iron Chancellor here in Bismarck, and I'm concerned. I was shocked at how quickly he moved to consolidate and grow his authority and his power in this office. Today they released the budget yesterday. I guess he was speaking to the legislature and you know, he wants lawyers and auditors and compliance officers, and all with an idea of saving money in the system. But the money keeps going into the system, and none of this is going for teachers. None of it's going for the people who actually deliver the educational content. I'm worried about that. But you and I heard him at our Rotary Club, my Rotary Club. I'm the incoming president of Bismarck Rotary, and you heard him deliver his remarks the other day. And when he said, which is what I suspected, when he said, "No, this is going to drive elementary and secondary education. It's going to improve the quality of it from the top down." I thought this is just dead wrong. It may not be a terrible plan, although it's the California plan and it hasn't worked very well in California. But it may not be a terrible plan, but it's not something that comes from the top down. He's going to need to consult with the elected superintendent of public instruction about what the impacts are on elementary and secondary education, or he's going to have a fight in the legislature, and then education loses Education needs to, it's the number one thing we do as a state, is educate our kids. There's nothing more important that we do. And we all need to be working together. I absolutely agree in the concept of a P20 system, where we are from pre-kindergarten right through graduate school, we are working seamlessly in one organization. But that doesn't come from the Iron Chancellor.
Kirsten, what do you think about what he has proposed?
It's exciting times, and I should first say that I think we're all aware in North Dakota that the higher ed board and the higher ed system in North Dakota has taken some severe hits and some real difficult times. They've gone through some real difficult times and have some black eyes. And I think that the current chancellor was hired by the higher ed board. And the legislators expect that some changes be made, and we better move off the mark. Whether his proposal is ideal, that will have to, time will have to tell. But I think the thing that encourages me the most about that, being said that we have to do something in higher ed. The state expects it, our lawmakers expect it, our taxpayers expect it, and he's been hired to move off the mark. What encourages me is I've had the opportunity to be a participant in several conversations, and one of those most recently occurred last week, and it was orchestrated by some of the members of the Department of Public Instruction and Chancellor of Higher Ed, and members of his office staff were there to share information. There were school counselors there, high school counselors from both Class A, Class B. There were members of NDEA and the School Boards Association, and there were superintendents from both small schools and our larger school districts. And what occurred during that four-hour meeting and conversation was a real understanding and a communication. And there was brought to the table by our small school districts that the way that the current formula proposal, it was really going to be at a disadvantage to our Class B schools because of their course offerings. And through that conversation and discussion, there were adjustments that were made in the formula for the automatic admission. And there was a lot of enlightenment, I think, on the part of us as K-12 systems. Also, what occurred during that conversation, and as we're moving forward, as we should, as we're working out this process, is that there's a better understanding of what the changes are going to be on the higher ed side. All the changes cannot be made on the K-12 side. But in addition to those, the delivery of the teachers that are coming to work in our K-12 systems, what is that going to look like? The remedial courses that our students are needing to take their freshman year of college, it's a concern of mine, and it was part of my August press conference that I held as one of the first three things that I want to address. So the idea of adjusting and helping solve that problem of remedial classes is important to me, and we need to continue that conversation. There needs to be more consistency. The point was brought up, and I've experienced it. It doesn't matter sometimes. Student A from Mandan High School can go to UND, and their English 101 syllabus, depending on the teacher, can be completely different. So student A may be successful in classroom B's class up at UND, and not if they get classroom B or C or D. And so there needs to be some consistency so K-12 can hit a target of what is going to be expected at any of our colleges or university, whether it be Minot, Valley City, Dickinson, UND, or Fargo. But I think the final thing that I'd like to say on that is, as we move towards these new admission requirements and we talk about pre-K through 20, it's very important to me that we value all of our occupations in North Dakota, that we value all of our secondary programs, whether they be career and technical or whether they be, geared towards graduate work. And it's important that we value all of our students so we can place our students where they're going to be happy and successful.
Now, given, and I'll go back to you again, because you brought up the P through 16, P through 20 efforts, mm-hmm. and you both have said that you like the idea. What are the impediments that need to be overcome to have more cooperation and more coordination between people who are teaching Head Start programs and people who are teaching, graduate courses?
a true commitment to collaboration and getting the job done for our children. We can't worry about turf wars. We can't worry about whose area this is or whose responsibility is. To put aside our personal agendas and really remember that the most important thing needs to come first. And the first thing is the child, and the second thing is the child, and there should be nothing in between. And once we do that, and we also really, there is a whole host of students in North Dakota that are being educated in our non-public school systems as well. Those people need to be included in the conversation, as do our industry leaders, our business leaders, our manufacturing, so we can all have a conversation about what's going to be best in the state of North Dakota for our children.
Tracy.
That's essentially right. They have to get out of the silos. You know, we all live in our own silos, and there's this one and this one, and we worry about the authority. And when it is all about responsibility and pulling it together. I really always admired Brynhild Haugland, you know, and she had the simple philosophy, you know, it doesn't matter who gets the credit for it, just get the job done, you know, basically. And so, but somebody does probably need to lead this. Because there are so many disparate voices. And I served on the Interim Higher Education Committee. We looked at, of course, the problem of the remedial classes at our universities for some of the students, and a high percentage, in the 20s, were taking those classes. And the solution, I'm more about process than I am about throwing out a firm solution, because you have to analyze how serious was that remediation. What was it, and where were they coming from? Where were the students coming from that were in it? All of that. But what worried me was that in some cases, the legislators wanted our students to turn out a certain way. It was almost like there was going to be a track system in North Dakota, because they say, you know what industry needs? It needs more welders. A fear that we're going to have sociology majors flipping burgers. And I don't know if you were there, Dave, but my responses to these, on a couple of different occasions, I looked at my friends from the legislature, my colleagues in the legislature, and I said, you guys are Stalinists. You know, you want our students to serve society. I want society to serve our students, in terms of a sociology major flipping burgers. Well, somebody's going to be flipping the burgers. Shouldn't they be fully actualized human beings? I mean, I just think that the drive towards standardization, towards setting up a completely similar education for everyone, is it doesn't take our students where they are. And we know that some students don't test well, even though they're as bright as anything. We know that some students learn in visual ways, and some learn in other ways. And, you know, we just have to, I think we have to maintain the maximum flexibility within our system to help our students achieve. And I know I've gotten off the topic.
Well, and I'm fine. I am fine with having, you know, a sociology major flipping burgers. I just don't want that sociology major to have the average $20,000 college debt to go along with that. And so I want to set up a system that will make them, you know, successful, happy in whatever course of life they choose, in the best means possible, and be able to start their real life without debt. And I think that's the responsibility of our pre-K 20 system in order to do that.
And we'd all agree with that. And of course, my voting record proves that I believe that too. Okay.
Well, I'll ask you both, and I'll start with you, Senator. How do you do that? How do you set up more so that there isn't students coming out of college with huge debt? Because that's become more and more a reality these days.
The legislature has made some moves in this regard, and I'd credit Senator Grinberg and Fargo for really taking a lead in attempting to create scholarship programs for our students. When I ran for the Senate, I said there were two things that were too high, and that was tuition and property taxes, and we have to work on that. But at the same time, are our college professors paid, the national average or even the regional average? We need to compensate those people that are serving in these positions. So how do you do it? Well, the state right now has a lot of money. It's got a $1.6 billion surplus in this biennium, a $2 billion surplus in the coming biennium. There's almost $2 billion in the Common Schools Trust Fund. We have the resources, if we want to invest in our education, to let those kids that are graduating from North Dakota schools go on to college without steep tuitions and burdening them. And this is one thing that I'd like to say about the Chancellor's program that bothered me as well. Because as a kid growing up in Grand Forks, we were lower middle class family. But when it came time to go to the University of North Dakota, my brother did, my sister did, and I did, because we could actually sleep in our own beds at night, and Mom would still make supper, even though she was working a full day, she came home and made supper, and we were able to then get by with just the tuition and books, and sometimes the books were in the library, and we could get by, and so the debt burden was not that great. Kids today are facing a much bigger problem, and I'm sorry to take more time, but I want to expand on this because one of the things that was clear was that our students were not continuing. We graduate more kids from high school than almost any other state, and they go on to college more than any other state. But that second year, we weren't finding where they were going, and there wasn't a study to tell us if they were going to schools out of state or where they were going, but it seemed like they were dropping out. And so are we failing then? Is there something? Were they not prepared for school? Well, there are so many reasons, as we've talked with many people about, so many reasons why it could be that they're dropping out. One reason being it's a different society. You don't have to go to class when you go to college, as I've said, I became a very good pool player in my freshman year, but not a very good student. But there's also the fact that it's become so expensive that so many of our kids have to work. And when they work, now they found, oh, gee, I've got to put in all these hours at school, and I've got to put in all these hours at work, and where's my life? And it's just, and it drags them down, and eventually school gives way to that. And so we have to do something about this, and the state has the resources to make our higher education system affordable to every North Dakotan that's qualified to go.
I know, Kirsten, it's a little bit out of the K-12 realm, no. But really, you're talking education as a whole thing. How do you solve this problem?
Absolutely. And it isn't out of the K-12, because that's what we're doing is preparing those kids to that next level. So it's completely our mission and our goal. And so the question is, how do you solve that problem? And how do you remove that or, try to reduce the debt that students are coming out of college with? And I think it's very important, and it's a critical part. And that's why during my August press conference, it is two of the three-prong plan that I want to address, and it addresses that immediately. The answer is to get those students to graduate on time within the 4 years. My second prong of my three-prong plan is to remove the need for the remedial classes and using their high school core course grades and their ACT score predicting whether they will need remedial. We don't have them take a remedial course, pay for a remedial course at the university or college that they're paying for and not receiving any credit for. We move that down to the high school level, their senior year, and what was once a remedial course at college is now a college preparation course their senior year. That's the first thing. The second thing is to accelerate and offer more opportunities for our 9th through 12th graders to take more dual credit courses and more advanced placement courses. In Minnesota, there's a plan that many of their students graduate with at least 15 semester hours of credit by the time they graduate from high school. We can incorporate that at a reduced cost to our parents in North Dakota. We have the resources. I visited with the people, and that's how you lead, and you step up and you create and you put those opportunities in place. Another thing that when I was in college, we need to incentivize our students to take more than just 12 credits there for each semester at the university or college. And right now there is no incentive. You pay for per credit. What we need to move back to is once you're a full-time student, that's your tuition for the semester, and you can take up to 16 or 18 or 20 credits. We need to get our students to graduate on time. Remedial courses and college preparation courses instead of remedial courses in high school, accelerated advanced placement classes, and dual credit classes in high school. That will help our students.
But what you just said about per credit hour tuition is a little bit at odds with what the chancellor is saying right now. He was talking about at the interim committee the other day that it was going to be per credit up to 15 credits, but anything after 15 credits at the research universities, that's free and clear.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a little bit at odds with him on that.
We are. And there, I would like to see a full-time student, 12 credits, and then anything beyond that, even at our Minot State Universities, our Dickinson States, to encourage those students to take beyond 12 credits so they can graduate on time.
I agree with my opponent, not with the chancellor. This is and there's a couple points about the chancellor. You know, I just I'm not running against him, but I just can't help myself because as a former legislator, it just drives me crazy. You know, the security, the additional security staff that's going to be at the chancellor's office. Well, is that because he's going to be visiting Minot State? They don't like him very much up there. I've got to tell you, you know, this is not it's not a good. Not a good thing. We can make college affordable for North Dakota students. I completely agree that the kids that want to take 18 or 20 credits should be allowed to do that at the rate that is a full-time student. And some kids won't take quite as many because they're working, things like that. But this should not be a penalty for being a good student.
All right, I want to move into something about teachers, and we talked a little bit about evaluations. I'll start with you, Kirsten.
Mm-hmm.
What about, and it keeps being brought up about merit pay for teachers. There have been some pilot programs that have been tried.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fargo had a pilot program to have merit pay, to have extra pay for the best teachers.
Yes.
How do you feel about the concept of merit pay versus the current lane and spoke system that we have in the way we pay teachers?
Well, one thing that I want to, before we begin the discussion, is really differentiate between two terms that quite often get thrown around interchangeably: merit pay and performance-based pay, pay for performance. And there are some similarities, but there are distinct differences. Pay for performance are systems that are really based on test scores. And that is just one factor of what a good teacher is. And I have not seen yet any research that says that pay for performance models yield what we want it to do. People think, okay, we want pay for performance because we want to increase our student achievement. That there is no correlation between pay for performance plans and increased student achievement. And so I'm definitely opposed to that because that would not. And, you know, there are so many other factors that improve performance and increase, teacher skills than that. But ironically, and actually uniquely and wonderfully, during the last legislative session, the North Dakota Education Association, the North Dakota Council of Educational Leaders, which is our administrators, principals, and superintendents, and the North Dakota School Boards Association came together in common agreement to fund and have pilot programs for a different pay schedule, a different pay system that would support and pay our teachers differently for different responsibilities that they were taking on. That is something that I would like those three entities that are involved in education and in the trenches that we could agree on. I'd like that to be brought up again and discussed. The hiccup with that, the hurdle with that, it didn't get out of our legislature because it was going to remove money from our student foundation aid, student per pupil funding formula, and there was a real reluctance on all school districts' part to do that. But I do believe it's worth investigating, especially when the experts in all levels of education agree that it's worth discussing.
Okay. Tracy,
the fundamental answer to your question is you posed it as pay our best teachers more. Well, how do we know who they are? You know, that's where we get back into measuring our teachers in some way, evaluating our teachers based on what? Well, I believe we do evaluate our teachers based on the principal, but I don't want the principal to be giving his favorite teachers, you know, a bump and other teachers not, and creating consternation among the and competition among them. I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake to go down that road. For one thing, certainly to go to a model where you're basing it on the test scores of the students would be absolutely ridiculous. I talked to a Fargo teacher earlier this year who has two autistic children in her classroom, and the chances that the test scores of her class are going to be equivalent to the teacher across the hall that has none like that is just not rational. I understand the idea of paying teachers for what they do. So if you for instance drive the school bus, as many rural teachers do, or your coach, you get some additional bump. There may even be merit in paying the teachers for those more for those subjects that are hard to obtain teachers. I know that when I applied for a teaching job in American schools overseas, the interviewer said, "Well, if you were a physics teacher, I could place you. You know, history teachers, they're a dime a dozen." And I know that that's and so there may be some merit in analyzing, using market forces basically to determine what who we have to recruit. But no, the answer to this question is no. I'm not for merit pay, performance-based pay.
Okay, this is going to be one where I'm maybe getting a little bit into the weeds, and it's because of what the legislature is discussing. You know, the idea that now schools get 70% of their funding from the state. There are some legislators who are starting to say, "Wait a second, we can do this for another 2 years, but maybe it's not sustainable because the costs keep going up." I wanted to ask Senator Potter first. 70% has been a goal for as long as I've covered news in North Dakota, which is probably since the Earth's crust has cooled. Can we save 70%, or is there some other mechanism that you can use to fund schools?
Well, 70% has been the goal. And when we weren't anywhere close to 70%, you saw the outrage from property taxpayers. And that's what led to kind of the 2006 election victories for those who were calling for property tax relief. And in fact, we ended up with the property tax bill, as you'll recall. It was my bill, basically reworked and brought back in the last day of the session to provide the income tax credits. The natural tendency, of course, of the legislature, just like this natural tendency of the federal government, is control follows money. And so they're looking at this going, well, yeah, but we're paying 70% of a moving target. And how do we know that the money is being well invested at the local levels? I think 70% stays the goal. But property tax relief is done in a different fashion. The way that we're doing it right now, too much of the money goes to out-of-state corporations and out-of-state landowners. I really believe that it should be tied either to a homestead tax credit, as Senator Taylor has recommended, or the plan that I have recommended in the past and continue to recommend, which is that it's a credit on your income tax, a refundable credit on your income tax. So even if you don't owe income tax, you can get back up to 50% of your property taxes that way. And that way, we allow the local school districts to continue to budget, continue to have the control. They get elected. They should have the right to. And if you don't like what they're doing, throw them out of office. You know, so I think this is the way that we approach that. Retaining 70% as the state's goal.
Kirsten,
when I first was elected to the school board, way back when, the goal had always been 70%, but in Mandan, we were, we weren't collecting a lot of property taxes, and we did not have what Bismarck had as far as the retail. And the state funding at that point was just barely over 40%. Mm-hmm. So we were absolutely thrilled. And, you know, it has just taken such a burden off of our homeowners. And we have many of our small rural farmers that retire into Mandan. So we're very happy with that. I do believe that the 70% should remain the goal. I understand the concern of some of our legislators saying it is a moving target. But I do feel that the state does have that responsibility to adjust with that. I would not want it to go any higher. There's also the talk of, you know, providing property tax relief by funding school districts at a higher percentage. And I'm not in favor of that significantly higher, because I believe that there needs to be, you know, some skin in the game from the local people electing their local school board members and really becoming involved in what their local schools are doing. And I want to return as much of the local control back to our local school districts, school boards, parents, communities as we possibly can within the constraints of our North Dakota laws and our federal laws. I think it's going to be very, very important for the superintendent of public instruction to work closely with all of our legislators as these bills come through the legislative body this session, and identify and communicate clearly what the impact is going to be on all of our school districts, in particular to each legislator in their home districts.
One thing that's being talked about now, and I'd like both of you to respond to this, the idea that the state can pay more for new school construction, maybe even renovating schools. And of course, you've got this law that said that in North Dakota, if you're going to have a local school bond issue, you have to get 60% vote, 60% plus one vote. Kirsten, you deal with that in Mandan all the time.
Yes.
Your thoughts on that particular issue?
You know, we recently just passed a bond issue in Mandan, and that's our second. You know, we're growing as everyone else in Western North Dakota is growing. We were thrilled. We had well over 70% support. And I believe, again, in that grassroots, 60% is tough, but it really does make a school board, a school district really contemplate. We had been, you know, addressing this issue for the last 4 years heavily in our facilities committees and our finance committees, and we had to work long and hard, and we were very confident that this was the best decision for our community, and we'd involve community citizens. And I fear that without that type of mandate, without that type of requirement, that some of that would go away in our school districts, and it might leave some of our communities without a voice that they do deserve. So I don't disagree with the bond issues, but I do agree that in the state that of growth that we're in, especially in Western North Dakota, the state government can and should find mechanisms and ways for them to assist in the construction and meet these needs as soon as they possibly can.
Tracy. The state's rich and the districts are not. And so, in essence, that's correct. But I do want to deal with this in two different things. One is, if we really want to involve our citizens, if the school boards really want to involve the citizens in these decisions, then they would hold their elections at the time that we hold other elections. They wouldn't be elected in elections that are not associated with the, for instance, the primary or the general election and the bond issues. We wouldn't have special elections for these. We would put them on the ballot with the general election, save the money, and involve more voters. I had Jim Casper, you may recall, Representative Casper from Fargo, had brought in a bill to attack the idea of the building authorities that get around the bond issues. And particularly the one in Fargo where they built the Davies High School without a vote of the people at all. And Davies High School is awesome, by the way. It's a great school, and I'm glad they've got it. Representative Casper had a plan. And I listened to it and said, you know, he's right. There ought to be votes of the people on these kinds of things. But they shouldn't be 60% margins. And so we negotiated and, in fact, came out with a compromise that we carried to the Senate floor. And that compromise was, no, we're going to have votes of the people on new school construction, but it's only going to require 50% margin. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to convince my colleagues on the Democratic side of the to go along, and we lost that one on the floor. But to my mind, that's the way. I'm a civics teacher. You know, I know they call it problems of democracy. They even called it that when I taught it, but I still say it's civics. and I just think there's certain ways that we do things that are appropriate, and that is to democracy is not perfect, but it's the best system we've got.
I'm going to address the special elections issue just because I know that it's particular, and it was, you know, very, very personal to Bismarck and Mandan. And yes, both Bismarck and Mandan did have a special election in September. And that was under a set of circumstances. And I like the ability, the flexibility that local control is given to meet the immediate needs so as quickly as possible. And we had, you know, discussed having a June election or having it with the June election. Unfortunately, or, you know, by as it was, the Measure 2 was on the ballot, and we didn't even know if we would have the authority to levy any property tax. So the issue of a bond issue for property tax would completely moot, and so the primary was out. Then you begin to look at the November election, and as always, we're looking at cost savings, but then meeting the immediate needs of our local districts. Having a September special election both in Bismarck and in Mandan and putting the first thing first, the ability to meet our children needs first, we needed to have an answer so we could begin to move forward before a November 6th election would allow us to do with groundbreaking architecture work, all sorts of things like that. And every single citizen also had the opportunity and the privilege of voting on that day as well, just as they do in November 6th. So that's
they had the opportunity, but, you know, let's face it, the general election brings out the most people. General election in a presidential year brings out the most people. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not suggesting that this is my opponent here has done something amiss. I'm suggesting just that as we set things up, I think school board elections ought to be held at the same time as our other elections and not. And it's been traditional across North Dakota. And the only reason that I can think that it's traditional is because we don't want to let the great majority of people, we don't want the great majority of people to be there. We're letting them be there, but yeah. We would rather they didn't show.
I think school board elections, school board votes they coincide with other elections, either general elections or the primary elections, but bond issues typically occur at different times. I would agree with that.
Okay. We just have a few minutes left, and I want to give you time to, you know, make a closing statement, a closing case to the voters. But very quickly, how do you feel about the current core curriculum? Is it good, or should it be changed? And I'll start with Kirsten.
And I'm going to this may seem like a minor thing, but what we have is not a core curriculum. We have common core standards.
Okay.
And curriculum should be left up to the local school districts and the people in the communities determining what type of curriculum. Right now, the state of North Dakota has adopted the English and math common core standards across the nation. And right now, the science standards are being piloted, and we expect to adopt those soon as well. I believe that setting standards for learning is what we need to do in this country, because the example that I'll give, when I went up to Williston to visit their schools and see firsthand the issues that they were dealing with, I visited with the superintendent up there, and Mrs. LaFontaine shared with me that on their opening day of professional development, she did a visual exercise with her teachers, and she had her teachers, as they filed into the auditorium for their professional development the day before the kids came back to the classrooms, she had them carry a flag that represented a state from which a new student would be attending their classrooms that very next day. There were 26 different state flags. And with Common Core standards, we are assuring that our nation of children, whether they begin first, second grade in Arizona, move to North Dakota, and then on to Oklahoma, wherever their parents' job takes them, that they won't have gaps in learning. They won't be missing a major segment of geometry or, you know, multiplication or chemistry. And with that Common Core standards, we're much more transient nation, and we need to ensure that our students are learning what they need to learn by the time they finish high school.
I see that our time is running quickly, and I'll just say that as far as my view of the Common Core standards is that I find nothing offensive in them. They're reasonable, but about standards themselves, just raising standards. You know, when you can't make the when you have a high jump, and you miss the high jump, well, you don't get better at it by raising the pole. And so I don't think that our push towards standardization of education, our push towards measuring, has improved education. I don't think it's getting better in recent years. I don't think it's bad in North Dakota, but I don't think it's any better than it was when we were students.
Okay. We have just a moment or two left. I'm going to give you each about a minute to make the case to the voters and Senator Potter.
One of the issues that I think is important to this race is the way that you get to the office. And I have approached it from a nonpartisan point of view because this is a no-party office. There's no question that I'm a Democrat. I've been a Democrat, forever. But I believe that when you approach a no-party office, you need to do it without party support, without party money. I've taken none, and I haven't asked for any. And in that, when I take this office, I will be completely independent. And every decision that I make and every person I hire will be based on their quality, not their political party. And my opponent will say that this is true for her, too. But she's inexperienced at this game, and the pressures that will come down from the political party that's electing her are going to be massive.
Okay. And Ms. Baszler.
I will say that my allegiance and my complete loyalty, as it has been for the last, my entire adult life and my entire career in education, my allegiance and commitment is to the children of North Dakota. And you're right, I will make every decision and every hire based on what's best for them. I believe my comprehensive perspective as an educator, vice principal, a leader in a district that has gone from troubled to one of the leaders in the state, that experience has provided me great, great wealth of knowledge of how we move education forward. And I would ask that the voters support me because I believe it's inherently important that someone that understands and can communicate to non-educators or lawmakers and to the public, being able to communicate in common language how important a bill might be or a funding might be. And I have that experience. I have that ability to lead and create a better system for our students.
Thank you both very much. You have been listening to the candidates for the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Kirsten Baszler and Tracy Potter. And you heard the passion in their voices. Now it's up to you. When you go to the polls, make up your mind. Thank you for listening. For Prairie Public, I'm Dave Thompson.